provision, of God's providence. And what we see in the book of Ruth is God's providence, his control over all things. His providence and his purposes get worked out through the ordinary lives of his people. God's purposes get worked out through the ordinary lives of his people. At the core, even if you've never been to church, you may have heard of this person, Ruth. You may have heard of Naomi. You may have heard of Boaz. You may have heard of people like David. But when you read the Bible, they were just ordinary people. They were from a small little town in Bethlehem. And this is who God uses. This is what God works through. We see God bring his peace through his people. His peace being flourishing, shalom, the way things ought to be. We see it in the life of Naomi, who chapter 1 ended with her being bitter. She said, "Don't even call me Naomi," which means pleasant. She goes, "Call me bitterness." She moves from bitterness to that she's blessing God at the end of this chapter. She moves from famine until the end and says that they were satisfied. They were fulfilled. Dean Ulrich in the commentary called The Story of God says this theologically rich chapter, there may be a slide for this, this theologically rich chapter invites reflections on God's providence. As we watch the events in the lives of Ruth, Boaz, and Naomi unfold providentially, providence means God's working of his will in all things to bring about God's greater purposes, we are reminded that the God in whom we trust also works behind the scenes in our own lives to bring about his greater purposes. It's one of the joys and the gifts of being connected to God. One of the things we say about Crosspoint is that our desire is that we would connect our story to his story. When we begin to live for him and with him, we're connected to something that's far greater than we could ever ask or imagine. God works in and through it. So God works through his people, and it brings a deep peace and a deep trust for us. Trusting in God's providence brings a tremendous amount of peace and freedom and courage to be about his purposes. That's what we see in Ruth. That's what we see in Boaz. That's what we begin to see in Naomi as she turns from bitter and sorrowful to having joy and peace and comfort because of who God is. And so we want to see today how God works in and through his people, how he brings about his purposes through his people. The first section, we'll look at this idea of God's providence, his plans coming about. Then we'll see God's provision, how he provides through his people. And ultimately, it results in peace. Verse 1 through 4, we see God's providence. It says, "Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz." This is like the narrator talking. And then it dives into the story. And in verse 2, it says, "And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him, in whose sight I shall find favor.' And she said to her, 'Go, my daughter.'" Verse 3 says, "So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers." And it says, "And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech." Verse 4, "And behold, Boaz happened to come from Bethlehem. And he said to the reaper, 'The Lord be with you.' And they answered, 'The Lord bless you.'" The narrator is kind of laying out the story of God's work behind the story of our lives. We talked about it last week that the story of Ruth and the story of our lives are really a greater story of God. We see him work to bring about his purposes for his people. And it starts with this Boaz. He's introduced in verse 1 and then reiterated in verse 3. And it says, "whose name was Boaz." And if you come at the end of verse 3, it says, "And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech." So we're introduced to this character, Boaz, who is a man of power, a man of influence. And it emphasizes two things over and over again. One, it emphasizes his character. It says that he was a worthy man. We'll come back to that. And it emphasizes, too, that he was a relative. In verses 1 and 3, it talks about that he was the clan of Elimelech, that he was a part of their family. And family was a means that God uses to provide and protect people. God uses our families for that. And so it says that there's this worthy man who was a relative of them. It's kind of setting up the whole story. And then we see Ruth. And it says that Ruth went out to glean, and she happened to come to the field belonging to Boaz. Literally, when it says happened to come, it means as chance chanced. It's like double chance. It just happened that she went there. She was lucky to end up there. And then at verse 4, it says, and behold, Boaz just happened to come out to the field from Bethlehem on the day and at the time that Ruth showed up. What the narrator is doing is showing that God's working behind the scenes in all of our lives. He explains what's going to happen, who these people are, and then it flows out of what happens in their lives. When we understand this, when we understand that God is working all things for our good and for his purposes, it again brings a lot of peace. It brings a lot of freedom. It brings courage. Paul Miller, in his book called A Loving Life, said these seemingly coincidental instances reveal the designer behind the story. When we know there's a designer behind our story, behind our lives, it renews our courage to endure in the story. When we know there's a designer, when we know there's one behind the story, it gives us courage to endure the story, to endure the darkness, to endure the challenges, to have the courage to be the type of people God calls us to be. When we know that he is working all things, it gives us courage, it gives us peace, it gives us freedom. Dean Ulrich said, the events of our lives are the scene of his providential and redemptive activity. God is at work. Nothing occurs by chance, takes God by surprise, or exceeds his power to handle. He said, this is the foundation of trust. Both Ruth and Boaz illustrate the look of trust. I really like that. Ruth and Boaz illustrate the look of trust. Did they know what was going on? No. Did they know how they were going to be provided for? No. Did Ruth know where she would end up? No. But they had a trust. They showed back up to the place of God, to the people of God, and asking for God's provision. They had the look of trust. To trust a God of providence is to go above and beyond conventional wisdom. When we celebrate Advent, the season of light coming into darkness, the season of unclarity to have clarity, it's a reminder that the call to a life of faith, a life of trust, involves hope. It involves faith. It involves trusting God even when we can't see how things might work out, even when we don't know what he might do, even when we don't know how he might provide. This is all of life. Do we have plans? Yes. Do they always work out? No. I had plans this morning. I had like good plans. I had plans yesterday. I had to tell you this part. We have these computers. You put stuff in the computer. It pushes over to another computer. You open up. It all worked. Yesterday, didn't work. Right? 5 hours last night. Midnight. Trying to get this thing to work. It just didn't work. Right? I had a plan. Didn't come about. Woke up this morning. Had a plan. Didn't work out. Right? So what do you do? You move forward. You keep going. You trust that God's going to provide. He's going to do what he says he's going to do. These are silly, mundane things, but that's the things that we struggle with, right? Sure, we have the big questions of life, the health things, the relational things, the is God going to provide things, right? We're called to trust him in those things, but we're also called to trust him in the little things. What usually irritates you? What usually sets you off? What usually causes you to respond not in the ways that you're supposed to respond? They're the little things, right? But what really bothers us, what really we're sitting on, is the big things. And what we see in the story of Ruth is that we can trust God with the big things and with the little things. He's well aware that Naomi and Ruth have lost their husbands, that they're widows, that they're foreigners. Those are big things, right? And what does he provide for them? In the little things. I'm gonna send you to this field. I'm gonna provide you with this food. I'm gonna let you meet this person. Why? Because she got up and went out the house. God provides for us. It's his providence. It says she happened to come. He happened to come out to the field on the day that she was there. God doesn't promise to take away all your troubles. In fact, Jesus says, in this world, you will have what? Trouble. He said, you will. You're going to. But take heart. Why? I have overcome the world. I have bigger purposes. I have bigger plans, and they will come about. Trust in that. Rest in that. Have peace in that. Am I going to tell you everything? Nope. You're not God. I'm not God. My ways are not your ways, and my thoughts are not your thoughts. Rest and trust in the providence of God. It brings us a peace. And then he goes on and shows us how he is going to provide. God does what he says. He provides for Naomi. He provides for Ruth. And what we see throughout the Bible is God doing his perfect providential work through imperfect but faithful people. God provides through people. That's what he does. Ruth goes out. Naomi said, go out, my daughter. So she set out in verse 3 and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was a clan of Elimelech. She goes out. She ends up gleaning in this man Boaz's field. He takes notice of her. He takes interest in her. It's like, he says, whose is she? He doesn't ask, who is that? He's like, who does she belong to? What's her story? What's her background? He takes notice of her. And instead of taking advantage of her, he protects her. He provides for her. And he protects and provides for Naomi. We talked about that we're going to see some of these great themes of God in the book of Ruth. We learn characteristics to emulate. And we can see here, this is one of the great examples of what we can learn about being a part of God's people. What sort of people is God asking us to be? What sort of people should we seek to be as the people of God? What sets apart the people of God from everyone else? Because they were set apart. He's like, hey, don't go to the other fields. Why? Because you'll get assaulted. They'll take advantage of you. They won't leave anything for you. They won't provide for you. He says, stay with me. I'll provide for you. I will protect you. I'll make sure that you're safe. What type of people are there? Are they? First thing we see is that God is central in their life. You see it with Boaz. Verse 4 says, and Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reaper, so he said to the people he worked for, the Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you. This is how he greets his workers. This was normal, because that's how they responded to him. Boaz was also a man that God was at center of his life, because he did what God told him to do. He left his field for gleaning. That's what God commands in the book of Leviticus. So Boaz actually does what God tells him to do. And he says, hey, leave. Gleaning meant that you don't harvest everything. You leave some for the poor, for the immigrant, for the widow, for those in need. You leave some so they can come out and provide for themselves. Boaz was actually doing it. So he didn't just say like, hey, the Lord bless you. Like, oh yeah, I'm a Christian because I say so. He was actually doing it. His life showed that God was central to him. In Ruth, she has this great conversion. She says this statement of faith in chapter 1. She says, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. Ruth has this proclamation of faith. My faith and hope and trust is in the God of Israel, right? But she doesn't say it. What happens? She shows it. She shows that God is central in her life. Why? Because she goes out to provide for Naomi. It results in a life of faith. She didn't know how God was going to provide, but trusted that he would. One commentator talked about, like, how do we know that Ruth had this life of faith? Because she got up and left the house. She went to work. She went to provide for Naomi. She trusted that God would provide. Both of them show that God is central in their lives. And they don't just say it, they do it. And it shows through who they are. They have a Christ-like character. Who they are is revealed through what they do. What they do is shaped by who they are. As I read earlier, it says that Boaz was a worthy man. It means that he has noble character. He was a man of integrity, a man of standing. John Piper, in a book, where I like the title of it, it's called A Sweet and Bitter Providence. Because if we're going to believe in God's providence and his control, we got to trust that God's in control through the sweet things, the good things, the provision, but also the bitter things, the hard things, the challenging things, the things that we don't understand. Piper said of Boaz, says, if you want to know a man's relation to God, it helps to find out how far God has saturated him down to the details of his everyday life. What we see in this chapter about Boaz is he was a man of high integrity. He was a man of character. He didn't take advantage of Ruth. He didn't take advantage of his workers. He didn't keep everything for himself. He was a man who was compassionate. He was a man who was kind. He was a man that gave away power. How do we know he gave away power? His workers were doing what he wanted them to do. He was a man who wanted his fields gleaned, and so that's what his workers were doing. He got there and they're like, hey, what's she doing? She's gleaning. That's what you want us, that's what you want your fields for. Right? He prays for Ruth. Verse 12 says, the Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. I'm praying for you, Ruth. I'm praying that God would protect you. I'm praying that God would provide for you. I'm praying that you would experience God's presence. You would take refuge with him. He was a man of Christ-like character. Piper said of Ruth that there is no doubt that the writer wants us to admire and imitate Ruth. She takes initiative to care for her destitute mother-in-law. Now look, also her mother-in-law, when she goes back, somebody pointed this out. I wouldn't have kind of caught this at the beginning. And sometimes there's things that the author will like say or not say that's supposed to come. But imagine you're Ruth and Naomi comes back to Bethlehem and she goes, I have nothing. Right? And who's standing there? Ruth. We got shots fired is what we say around at our house. Right? Right? It's there. She's like, hey, I got nothing. Lou's like, hey, like, I am here. This is how even Naomi treated her. This commitment, this love, this Christ-like character isn't dependent on how people treat you. It's how you're called to treat people. She takes initiative to care for her mother-in-law. It says that Ruth is humble and meek. And does not put herself forward presumptuously. I love in verse 7. Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. She asks. Verse 10 says, who am I? Why have I found favors in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? She's got a humble posture about her. She works hard. She works hard from sunup to sundown. Initiative, lowliness, industry. Piper says they're worthy traits, and we will see them again. Ruth has been dealt a hard hand, right? Many of you have been dealt a hard hand. You have very hard things going on in your life. Some of them feel very big and overwhelming. Some of them feel very small and little annoyances. Today, me, little annoyances. right? Had a plan. It's an area I struggle with anyway. But I'm like, I'm getting better at it. I'm actually trying to put time into this. I value people over like process. So I'm trying to grow in the process part. So this is my version of like, I'm actually trying and it still didn't go well, right? It's annoying. But how do we respond? How do we act? We learn that God works with people who put him at the center, who have Christ-like character, and who are other-focused. Both Ruth and Boaz protected and provided for others. Again, Ruth is out in the field for Naomi. Paul Miller said, Ruth was simply helpful. This word hesed, it means commitment. It means a love without an exit strategy. And it's an internal thing. It's how we feel towards somebody, but it gets fleshed out. And Miller simply said that sometimes what we're just called to do is to be helpful. That's what the world needs, right? We don't need everybody to save the world. We just need people who are helpful. You know what your family needs? You to be helpful. You know what your workplace needs? You to be helpful. You know what your community needs? You to be helpful. It says that Ruth was helpful. It talks about Jesus. What did Jesus do? He showed up on any scene and he was helpful. People were worried. People were anxious. People didn't know what was going on. What did he do? He brought comfort with his words. People were in need. Like, hey, we ran out of wine. We need a little more. Who does Mary turn to? Jesus. Hey, Jesus, can we get some wine over here? Here, you're God. You could do stuff like that. So what does he do? Turns the water into the wine. What was he being? Helpful. Right? Other focused means oftentimes just being helpful. Where's their need? Who needs comfort? Who needs a pat on the back? Who needs a hug? Ashley's like, hey, are you okay? Need a hug? We should pray. Right? So some of you walked in and Ashley and I were praying. Why? Because it was a little chaotic. It was helpful. Thank you, Ashley. Boaz was other focused. He notices Ruth's need. He asks, whose are you? Who is this woman? His people said, she is a young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. He learns about her. Verse 11 says, but Boaz answered, all that you have done. He learned her story. All you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. And how you left your father and your mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before, the Lord repay you. Look at me. People like Boaz and people like Ruth did not associate. Boaz did not associate with people like that, of that status, of that stature. Again, there's this chart. I'll talk about it later. It's like 16 categories or statuses of people, right? It's like where you're in the pecking order of this time. Boaz was like third. It's like the king, the person in charge of all of Bethlehem, and then people like Boaz. He's like third on the list of power. And again, she's last. 16, doesn't get any lower than Ruth. What does Boaz do? He notices her. He moves towards her. He learned about her. And then he took initiative to meet her needs, verse demanding that she served him. Verse 8 says, and Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, do not go out to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young woman. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. He was very specific with her. He didn't want her to feel like she was a burden. The thing about Boaz and the thing that we're called to be about when we're other focused is that he doesn't just provide for her, he doesn't just protect her, but he made it personal. He takes it a step further. Again, he learns her story, and then he invites her into his table. Look at verse 14. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel into the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. Again, famine to fullness. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her, and also pull some out from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." He went above and beyond. He made it relational. He made it personal. Again, in this really, I encouraged you, if you want to kind of read Ruth through the lens of Naomi, there's a book called Shattered Dreams. And if you want to read it through this idea of like, what does it look like to live a loving life of Ruth? Paul Miller talked about how many barriers Boaz would have had to break through to relate and connect to Ruth. He calls her daughter. He brings comfort to her. He learns her stories. And there's a dynamic that is true. And Miller brought it up. He says, when you become wealthy, as Boaz is, and as 95% of people in Jupiter are, not all, 95. I know there's some that are way wealthier than others, but just in general, you fit this category. When you become wealthy, it's easy to lose awareness of the details and the needs of the poor. He said, money tends to elevate and separate us. That's what it does. I had a conversation this week. Somebody's like, it's a challenge to be poor. It's a challenge to not have enough and be around people who seemingly have everything. Right? And so it's on those who have more to what? Move towards the poor. Move towards those who have less. That's what Boaz does. He takes the initiative. I've shared this before. When I was in seminary up in Orlando, there was an affluent donor. They kind of just funded all nonprofits in Orlando. And what they found is that as they were supporting all these nonprofits in Orlando, the conditions of Orlando kept getting worse. So we're putting more money into the problems, but the problems aren't getting any better. And so they did this huge study. I mean, we're talking like people get like millions. They're billionaires. They get millions and millions of dollars. Christians do awesome stuff. They funded this study. Like, what's the problem? And they said the only effective means of care that really help the poor are nonprofits and organizations that view what they do as that you need mutually beneficial relationships. If it's just one person handing somebody something else, it doesn't work. Nothing ever changes. Until you see that both people have something to offer, both people have something to give, and a relationship is developed, that's when things change. That's when things become effective. That's when problems get solved, right? Boaz didn't just hand her a bunch of stuff, right? He went out of his way. He developed a relationship. He invested in her, and it changed her life. There was a relationship there. This is who we're called to be. This is what the type of people that God works through. People who God is central in their life, who have the character of Christ, who are focused on others. This has been our experience. Last week I shared how the shattered dreams thing. I didn't know I was going to share that, but Karina was a news anchor. She stepped down once we had Will and we were going to plant the church. And if you don't realize, especially maybe in smaller markets, not so much, but in a large market, top 20 market like in Orlando, a main news anchor is going to make more money than a church planter who's raising half of his salary. So not only are we going to walk away from stability and fame and name on billboards and stuff, we're going to walk into something that you're literally raising money for, right? And so we make this decision, and we had to raise half of our salary to start this church, and we had enough. It wasn't like, hey, I hope God provides, and then just like don't do anything. We knew that we had enough momentum and we had enough support to make a decision like this. And I'll never forget it. once Karina made the decision, like, hey, I need to focus on our family, and I'm going to focus on establishing this church, and I'm going to walk away from this career as she knew it at the time. There was our friend, Greg Crone. And we didn't have all the money raised. We were like 75. Like, we had a fair amount of it. And he's like, hey, let's go grab lunch. And he goes, I don't know how much you have left to raise. And he goes, but whatever it is, I got it. It's done. Don't raise any more money. I see the choices you're making. I see the sacrifices Karina's making. I see what you're trying to do to help with this church, to help get it established. I believe in it. I value it. I don't want you to worry about that anymore. He was also a dentist, and he wrote us into the dental practice. So we didn't have to pay for dental work. It was great. And then he sold the practice because his actually wife had a neurological disease, and he sold it to take care of her. He wasn't going to retire, sold his practice, take care of her, and wrote us into when he sold the practice too. Right? What did he do? He took care of us. Actually, we tried to find a dentist here one time. We went to it. They gave us a $2,400 bill, like, you need these fillings and stuff. I was like, this does not seem right. So I emailed Sharon. She goes, never go back there again. You guys come back here. We still go there. We've been here for nearly 10 years, right? Greg hasn't had this practice in 15 years. God's still using him to provide for us. This is the call. That's an extreme example. We have this opportunity all the time. To be people who put God at the center of our lives, who look for the good of others, to provide for them, to protect them, to be in a relationship with them, to really know them. And what is beautiful about this whole thing is that's through God's providential work through Ruth and through Boaz. Not only are Ruth and Naomi provided for, but their faith is strengthened. We see Naomi's heart literally change right in front of us. She goes from bitter to blessing. It says that she gleaned in the field in verse 17 until the evening, that she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an hour or an epiph of barley, and she took it up and went to the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She saw what Ruth had done, what Boaz had provided. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. She was full. And her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today and where have you worked? She said, blessed be the man who took notice of you. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, this man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed by the Lord. The one that was cursing God is now blessing through the name of God. It changed her. May he be blessed whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Naomi also said to her, the man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. And Ruth the Moabite said, besides, he said to me, you shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with this young woman, lest in another field you be assaulted. So she kept close to the young woman of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. And we said, this man is a close relative of ours. He is one of our redeemers. Ruth continues to work, and she brought back what she had gleaned and left over what she had eaten, and she brought it to Naomi. And this is what we see with Naomi. One, she moves from bitter in chapter 1 to blessing in chapter 2. God had provided for her. She came back to the presence of God, to the people of God, to the place of provision. The house of bread is what Bethlehem means. And God provided for her. It brought her peace. It brought her comfort. And then God also gave her hope. When things are dark, when you're confused, when you get a bad diagnosis, when you can't see, you know what you need? A little bit of hope. Naomi knows that Boaz is one of their kinsmen redeemers. There'll be more of this in chapter 4. I won't get fully into it. But it basically was a family member who would marry and buy back the family and property of a deceased relative. So if like one brother dies, the other brother marries them. And to give them provision, to give them protection, to give them a future, it would create a legacy for them. Naomi knows that Boaz is one of these kinsmen's redeemer. He's a kinsman. He is one of them. He is their family, and he is a redeemer. He has the means to buy them back. And what we see of this curious thing about Boaz is he answers his prayer for Ruth. What was his prayer for Ruth in chapter 2, in verse 12? The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wing you have come to take refuge. God uses Boaz to answer his own prayer. The Lord repay you. The Lord reward you. The Lord provide refuge. The Lord protect you. And he eventually becomes her redeemer. That's where the story ends. Boaz brings her peace. He buys her back. He protects her. He provides for her. But there was more going on. Remember at the beginning I said that when you connect your story to God's story, you become a part of something far greater, far more thrilling, far more meaningful than anything we could ask or imagine. Tim Keller noted that Boaz also becomes the means by which God brings us about his king, who not only is Ruth redeemed, there's this king that would redeem all of Israel, that he would redeem all of God's people. One pastor said, this worthy man is connected to the only worthy man, the ultimate redeemer. Again, all of this is pointing to the greater story of Jesus Christ. Of the 85 verses in Ruth, over 20 times it refers to this redeemer, this one who would buy back, this one who would sacrifice and provide for and bring into the family. And this is what Jesus came to do. Jesus came through Boaz. We'll see it on Christmas Eve. Jesus' lineage goes through Boaz. He came through Boaz, but he ultimately went to the cross to become our redeemer. It's what Jesus came to do. He paid the price for our sins, for our darkness, for our hopelessness. He overcomes our sins through his death. And what does he do? He brings us into the family of God. He does for us what Boaz did for Ruth. He paid the price. He brought him into the family. He provides for her. He protects her. This is why the story of Boaz and Ruth is about a story that's far greater. It's a story that points to the cross. It makes sense of the cross. People are like, oh, why did Jesus have to do? Because we were in darkness. We were separated from the family of God. We were foreigners. We were hopeless. We were 16 in the status levels in our relationship with God. Ruth's a reminder for us that God can redeem and bring anyone into his family. God can use anyone to be about his purposes. Again, are there any two people more different than Ruth and Boaz? They share two similarities, though. One, they're both in need of a redeemer. Boaz needed a savior. Ruth needed a savior. And they're also similar because they were both used by their Redeemer. God can use anyone. God uses Boaz. God uses Ruth. God uses Naomi. God uses you. And so if you want a life of consequence, if you want a life that matters, a life that has meaning and value and purpose, there's this call to come under the care, to take refuge in the God of the Bible, to put your hope and faith and trust in Jesus, who paid the price for you. And he can do well beyond anything that we could ever ask or imagine. We got to get this order right. we were at a dinner on, it turned into kind of an end of the year staff celebration. And Robbie talked about like the bracelets, the what would Jesus do bracelets, you know, those things. Where I was like, not knocking the bracelets. I love the bracelets, but he's like, you need to start with WDJD. You start with what did Jesus do before you ask the question, what would Jesus do? You start with what Jesus has done for you. He bought you back. He brought you into the family. He gives you a new spirit. You're accepted. You're loved. You're a son. You're a daughter. You're provided for. And it's out of that then you begin to ask the question of what would Jesus do? And as we look to the cross, we can know that. And then when we're in Christ, we can be Boaz and Ruth to others. We can be people who are about God's purposes of bringing about his peace. And there's three things we need, and I'll go quick and we'll close. In order to be the type of people that God uses, we need the motivation. And the scriptures say that we need to look at the cross. And as we look at the cross, it gives us the motivation to trust and be generous towards others. Jesus said, hey, you want to be generous? Paul talks about it in 2 Corinthians 8. He says, look to Jesus. Though he was rich, he became poor. And by his poverty, you become rich. He doesn't guilt them into being generous people. He tells them about Jesus' generosity towards them. When we look to the cross, we become generous. We become other-focused. You need motivation. The second thing you need is margin. We need margin in our lives to be able to notice other people, to care for other people, to provide for other people. Boaz gleaned his fields. It means he left some things over. He had enough margin to use what he had for the good of others. So you need to evaluate. This is what we constantly do. We got three teenagers. It doesn't feel like a lot of margin ever. Right? But we need to create it. How do we use our time? How do we use our talent? How do we use our treasure? Not just for us, because God gives us good things. Boaz ate the dinner with Ruth, right? He ate the fancy food. It was good. He liked it. And he shared it with somebody else. We need margin. And then we need the means. What are the avenues that we have to be the type of people that God has called us to be people of peace? What are our relationships? Do we have awareness of where the need is? Do you have awareness where there's need in your everyday life, at your work, in your neighborhood, in this community? Do we have awareness of those in need? As a church, we want to provide these avenues. There is needs here. That's why we give. That's right. Jesus says, hey, you wanted the first 10%. He says, hey, I want you to give that. One, this shows that God is central in your life, that your hope is not in money, but it's in me. So I want you to give, but I want you to give so more people can experience this peace. So this message can go out, so people can be cared for, so people can be loved, so people can be in relationships. And for us in this community of a lot of affluence, there is a lot of poverty. There is a lot of poor. And we need avenues to be able to be in relationship with them. That's why we beat the drum with Edna Runner. And it's more than washing buses. We wash buses so we can invest in kids, so we can invest in families, so we can develop relationships. And it takes a lot of time. We started rushing the buses. I started mentoring a kid. I met his mom when she picks him up there. I see her at the coffee shop. Hey, can I take Brandon fishing sometime? I think Weston wants to teach him how to fish. It's like, oh yeah, that's cool. Like, here's my number. Text me, call me. Like, what's the goal? What's the hope to invest in others? We'll share more next year, but we have a partnership with Compassion International where we partner with a church in Bolivia to sponsor children. They're the poor. We plant churches in areas that there's poverty. We support a church in Cape Canaveral, which is a very low socioeconomic area. There's a new church in Orlando that we support. There's another Spanish-speaking congregation in Orlando that we support. There's a church in Riviera Beach that we support. There's avenues. There's means for us to invest in relationships and point this community to Jesus. Let's pray.